Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me under the wire. My name is Meryl Dorey, and I was the president of the Australian Vaccination Risks Network for many years, and I'm also the mother of a vaccine-injured child who was injured by his DPT vaccine for the first time in 1989, and then again by his measles, mumps, rubella vaccine in 1990. That really stretched my memory. And Under the Wire is your home for censored information and information that is suppressed in the mainstream. And today I am absolutely delighted to be interviewing Greg Beattie, a person who I have known for many years and who was also president of the AVN for a time. And Greg is the author of two excellent books on vaccination. This one, Vaccination, A Parent's Dilemma, is out of print right now, but it is available on Greg's website, which is Vaccination Dilemma. And this one, Fooling Ourselves on the Fundamental Value of Vaccines, is one we're going to be speaking about quite a bit today. And you can get this both on Greg's website and on the AVN website. And I recommend it highly. I've probably given away more copies of that particular book than any other that I've ever read. It's a quick 5 or 6 hour read tops. And it takes a totally different perspective on vaccination than most other books that I've read. So I'd like to go to Greg now and to have him introduce himself as well. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Am I on, am I?
You are. You're live.
We have a split screen. Like I'm on one side, you're on the other.
That's it. You got it. You
Which
got
side
it.
Am I?
You are on the right side, of course. You're always on the right side, Greg.
On the right side of the screen. So if I turn, I'm saying hello, Meryl.
You don't tell too many of our secrets.
Yeah, the split screen. Let us say.
Okay, so I want to ask you just briefly how you came to get involved in this whole vaccination issue. Were you very bad in a former life, or what happened? Tell me a bit about it.
I was kind of dragged, kicking and screaming toward it. I was very reluctant to look at the argument that said the vaccines weren't safe or effective. Very much a straight down the road person. My first child didn't get vaccinated for whooping cough. But, that was a recommendation to the pediatrician because of its propensity to lead to brain damage. And she had had a convulsion before, shortly after birth. So the pediatrician said, we need to protect her. Let's not give her a whooping cough vaccine. And I remember thinking, that sounds weird because that exposes her to whooping cough, which is supposed to be an even bigger cause of brain damage. But anyway, I didn't question it. And then when she turned one, she had the measles vaccine, which was just a measles vaccine back in those days.
Right.
And she developed severe measles 3 weeks after that. So severe they wanted to hospitalize her. And that made me question things too, but not enough to think anything big about it. However, what changed for me was down the track I was reading several books on health, just trying to improve my own health, which was really poor when I was young. And I kept coming across this information suggesting that vaccines weren't all that useful. I thought that's very interesting. They suggested that they didn't really deliver us from the days when we had very high death rates from those diseases. That struck a chord with me. I thought, if that's true, then that's indeed big. That means I've been lied to all my life. And so I set about checking that. And I spent a lot of time checking it and found out that it was true. So that's when I started questioning everything about it. And that,
yeah.
And that was around about the same time as you were doing the same sort of things, I think, Meryl.
Yeah, 1994, it seemed to be the time that everybody was looking at this issue and finding exactly what you found. And you have a background in statistics, so you were qualified to look at the data on vaccinations that we weren't getting also.
Yeah, well, the data that I was looking at is actually pretty simple. Anyone can take a look at it and get the story out of it, which we'll have a look at later on.
Right, right. So I have to ask you, when your daughter was hospitalized with measles 3 weeks after getting the vaccine, oh, she wasn't, but they wanted to hospitalize her. Yeah.
My wife at the time was a mother calf nurse, and she said, look, I'll look after her.
Okay, that was probably just as well. But did the doctors try to tell you that it would have been so much worse if she hadn't been vaccinated?
I honestly can't remember. As I said, I wasn't that into the topic back then. These things were little question marks for me, and that was it. Not thinking.
Yes, and like so many parents, that led to you researching, and the researching led to you making a choice. Now, your approach to the vaccination issue is a bit different than most people's. Most people, when they look at vaccination, the thing that they are most concerned about is the side effects, the risks, and the potential harms that vaccines can cause. You look at it from a slightly different way, and I think it really resonates with me too, because my thinking has always been, if vaccines work, then we can weigh up the potential risk versus the potential benefit. But we need to look at first, do vaccines actually work, and are they responsible for the decline in deaths and sickness that we've been told they have been responsible for? So maybe you can speak to that a little bit, because your book, Fooling Ourselves, is all about that, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. I'd like to say first up, the concerns about vaccine harms, that is that their potential to be causing autism, other forms of neurological problems, autoimmune problems, all sorts of things, they are all vitally important topics to discuss. However, they are not going to win us the war. And this is something I'm very strong on. We need to look at what is motivating the people who want to take away our rights, the people who want to impose vaccines onto us.
Yeah.
What motivates them to do that? Because they're not unreasonable people. I think they've just got they've been fed with unreasonable information. And I think that our movement in general is going about this the wrong way. I don't think we're gaining ground. I think we're losing ground fast. And I think it's because of our strategy. And what I call the yes but responses. I'll explain what I mean by that. You see, the background belief in vaccination is that, as you said, it delivered us from the days when we had high death rates from various diseases. It eradicated smallpox and it got rid of polio. That's the background information. Now, if we all accept that background, then we need to realise that that forms an incredibly strong argument. An incredibly strong argument, because the death rates back 150 years ago, children, mainly from infectious diseases, used to approach 50%. In fact, sometimes they went over 50%. Now, that's a hell of a lot of kids dying from illnesses that they don't do anymore. They don't die from whooping cough and measles. As we all know, it still happens. It's extremely rare. So when we look at that transition from the days when lots of kids died to today when virtually no kids died from these diseases, we see a very, very strong argument indeed. And that's what motivates legislators, policymakers, people who are in the media. That's what motivates them to promote vaccines and to even go as far as imposing them on us.
Right.
They honestly believe in that. So our strategy, as I said, I call it the yes but strategy, is when they put that scenario to us that, hey, vaccines got rid of the deaths, and they got the polio and smallpox. We tend to respond with yes, but. We say yes, but they also cause autism. Or yes, but they also cause asthma. Yes, but they cause other autoimmunity problems. Yes, but they've got aluminium. Yes, but they've got mercury. Yes, but they've got aborted fetal cells. Or yes, but they violate my human rights. And those, whilst they are valid arguments and extremely important to themselves, they are incredibly weak arguments when held up beside the argument that, hey, if we abandon vaccination tomorrow, we would go back to the days when children were dropping like flies to these diseases. So the relative strength of the two arguments just can't be compared. So we cannot approach it with these yes but arguments. We have to tackle this belief head on. So we have to, in my opinion, make our strategy first and foremost attacking that belief system, exposing it. We don't have to attack it like it's a battle or anything, just exposing the true data. It's very easily done, and it's fortunate for us that it is easily done. It's easily broken down. We just have to get our heads around how to do it. And people have been spending so much time getting their heads around the autism argument, the human rights argument, and various other arguments. I think you'd only need to spend a little bit of time getting your head around the argument.
All right.
Polio? No, it didn't. Conquering smallpox? No, it didn't. Reducing us from the days of high death rates? No, it didn't. And then all of a sudden, the imperative is gone. There's no great motivation to impose this thing from the population.
Yes. You had said that vaccines have taken credit for the decline in deaths from infectious diseases only because mass vaccination came about at the same time as the diseases were declining anyway. And to quote what every doctor and every health official says, correlation does not necessarily equal causation. So maybe we can look at one or two of the graphs, or maybe even more of the graphs that you have in your book, and you can explain a bit about them. So which one would you like to start with?
Let's start with the measles graph.
The measles graph?
Okay.
Yeah. No problem. That's now on the screen.
Okay, all right. And I think it, by way of explaining to people how they can present this case, this would be step one. You would show graphs such as this. Now, this is my graph, but you can, of Australian data, you can find other graphs on the internet for other countries. And they all show the same story. And by the way, you can see it on the screen, but I'll just show you here. I've got a little copyright symbol here.
Yes.
You don't need to worry about that, everybody. Use these as much as you want. Republish them, use them. I did not put that on as an ownership thing. I put it on to claim responsibility. I'm responsible for plotting these graphs. Because earlier graphs that I produced didn't have that on, didn't have my name on them, and all sorts of problems. And so the health department said, where can I get these graphs? And the health department told them there are no such graphs.
And so maybe
I was a fraud.
Maybe you can take a second now and tell us how difficult it was for you to access the information that you used to plot this graph. This is not just information that's available on every, you go to the Department of Health website or you go to the Australian Bureau of Statistics website and you can compile this data. You had to really work to get it.
Yeah, one would think that this data is just so basic, so fundamental to the discussion that it would be available easily and in one spot, but it wasn't.
Now, I had
to go to all the individual yearbooks and collect the data, collate it all. And for the data before the turn of the century, that was 1907, data before that, I had to go to a historical publication. But all the sources of the data are listed here on the base.
Okay. Yep.
So it was quite a task. Go on, sorry.
Also, before they allowed you to use this and to print this information, you had to jump through some hoops. Could you tell us about that as well?
No, actually, not to use this information. That was, that's another thing you're thinking of, but other information that I had published about more recently.
Right,
okay. Information data that I'd got special permission to use, and there were certain restrictions.
Oh, that was the whooping cough data. I remember now. Yes, that was excellent. I'd like to talk about that before we finish today, too. I haven't spoken with you about discussing that, but I would be interested, especially with all the whooping cough stories coming out now. But let's not get sidetracked before we have to.
I doubt that we'll get through everything today. We might need a part two and a part three.
I will be fine with that. Okay.
All right. So as I was saying, this is step one, these graphs. This is for measles, and you've still got it on the screen, have you?
We can. If you can get the measles graph back on the screen, that would be great. What this graph describes is the deaths from measles for the last, well, it was from about 1870 to 1970, was it? Or
around about 100-year period.
Yeah.
And it's deaths per 100,000.
Yep, in Australia. And that line and arrow is pointing to where the measles vaccine was introduced. It came in 1963 in the US, but in 1970 in Australia. And as you can see, by the time the vaccine was introduced, death rate was vanishingly rare.
The death rate had declined by 99.5% before the vaccine came along.
Right.
So now a lot of the misunderstanding about these graphs I want to clear up right now. These graphs do not show that vaccines don't work. Nothing of the sort. What they show, as I said, this is step one. What this graph shows is that the measles vaccine was largely irrelevant in the demise of measles as a killer disease, right? As it went down, 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 down. The vaccine was largely irrelevant. I say largely because a little bit at the end might have had something to do with it. Okay. Now, can we put the diphtheria graph?
Diphtheria graph? Sure, no problem. Diphtheria on its own, right? Not the one compared to croup?
It's got croup on it there as well. It's got a few different parts in it.
All right, no worries. That's on the screen now.
Okay, well, basically the thick line is the one you want to look at. Diphtheria and croup were regularly confused and combined in the past. That's why there are several lines there. But once again, we see diphtheria vaccine was largely irrelevant. All you've got is a little bit in the end that it may have been relevant for. But for the vast majority of that decline, in this case 85%, decline before any vaccine was used, and around about 98% decline before it was used en masse.
Right.
So the vaccine was largely irrelevant.
So then again, we have a correlative link, but not a causative link between vaccinations and the decline in deaths from these diseases. And I know that a lot of people watching this are going to be asking, so if vaccines weren't responsible, why were these deaths declining? What was the link?
Well, we can speculate as to what brought about the decline in deaths. Most people will tell you it's just an increase in living conditions. We have better nutrition, we have better sanitation, we had relief from poverty, all sorts of things. I mean, these diseases were basically diseases of the industrial age. At the beginning of the industrial age, we formed cities and we didn't have the infrastructure to even get fresh food. But that's another topic in itself. If we could put the whooping cough graph up, we're still on.
Whooping cough graph? Okay, no worries. All right, it's up on the screen.
Okay. Once again, we see the same story. The vaccine is irrelevant in the demise of chicken pox at the Philip disease. Before the vaccine was used at all, any use whatsoever, the disease, the deaths had declined by 86%. And before it was used en masse, they declined by 96%. I say, once again, largely irrelevant. That's step one. Now, I won't go through any more graphs in step one. What I want to do next is go to step two. It shows you that they were completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
For that, I'd like to get the scarlet fever graph up. And
okay, scarlet fever. Hang on just one sec. I'm very blessed today to have an assistant to help me here, which is wonderful because otherwise I need three heads and 25 hands and it still doesn't work. Okay, scarlet fever is now up.
Okay, now that graph has two lines on it, one for scarlet fever and one for measles.
Yes, it does.
And I've done the same thing with the typhoid fever graph. It's compared to whooping cough. Now, the reason I'm showing these graphs, just get your head around this. What this shows you is that other diseases declined and went away without a vaccine at all. So what it means is that that little bit at the end of the measles graph, where we were wondering, could the vaccine have caused a little bit of decline at the end, or with the whooping cough graph, but there's actually a little bit of space we can see here, did the vaccine bring about that? Well, these graphs for scarlet fever and typhoid fever say, that ain't likely.
Yeah.
That's what happened with all diseases, whether they had a vaccine or not. So there's no reason, there's no rational reason to think that both vaccines brought about the tail end decline in those diseases.
Yeah. And there's that expression, those who forget the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them. Because if we look at the actual history, yes, measles killed a lot of people. Yes, whooping cough killed a lot of people. But that was well before either vaccine came in. And they've taken credit for not killing those people anymore. But there's no evidence that that's the case.
Yeah, well, the arguments that people raise, before people see these graphs, you will find journal articles, newspaper articles, people speaking on the radio, etc., who will say, oh, it's been a game changer. We brought in a vaccine and the deaths, which used to average 400 a year, are now averaging 0.4 a year. And what they do, the way they come to this is they say, okay, we look at whooping cough and we pick a time roughly in the middle. That's about the average death rate before the vaccine came in. The average death rate was X per year. And now the average death rate is right down here. So I'll give you two data points to compare. And that's very dishonest.
Yeah.
Or another way to do it, this is the way Margaret Burgess did it. She said, okay, everything from when we had the vaccine start, everything from then on, we'll take the credit off. And so she adds them all up for all the vaccines to be used and said, we must have saved 70,000 lives in 50 years.
And that's another topic we're going to talk about soon, too, is the how that information in developing countries is being perverted to make vaccines look more effective. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you another question that we get all the time, mostly from people who've never looked at this issue. And that is, yes, you're showing us declines in deaths, but the incidence has declined like crazy since the vaccines came in. So why aren't you looking at the incidence figures? Why aren't you looking at what these reports of infection are? So can you talk to that for a minute?
Yeah, two big problems with that argument. One is it can't possibly be true. And the second is we don't have any data to show it. We don't have incidence data. I'll explain that. One, it can't possibly be true. If If vaccines reduced the incidence of the disease by 90%, which is what they're likely supposed to do, 90% effective vaccine, then they must have, by inference, reduced the death rate by 90% too, since they came in. So you can't get away from that. It must show up in the mortality figures as well. And if improvements in health care and hospital care and all that also added, then it must be more than 90%. So that's point number one. Point number two is we don't have incidence data. And people don't realize this. Scientists don't realize it. Most medical people don't realize it. We do not have incidence data. We have what's called notification data. It's a system that was never set up to collect incidence data. It was a system that was set up to respond to public health crises. Okay? So sometimes doctors are encouraged to report every case of whooping cough they saw, and sometimes they weren't. In fact, if you look at whooping cough as an example, in Australia, the very year that it was put into mass use, 1953, all Australian states were it was no longer a reportable disease. It couldn't be reported. I think 6 out of the 7 states, sorry. It was no longer a reportable disease. So it was such a haphazard system for collecting notifications. But notifications are not incidents anymore.
Right.
We have no way of measuring incidents. Some people try to do it and they get close. But how would you measure the incidence of an illness? You don't know how many.
And it's so prone to bias because doctors are much less likely to send a fully vaccinated person's blood off for testing than the blood of a non-vaccinated person, especially for things like whooping cough. So I did want to, before I go on to that, I did want to just go over a little bit also about how this data is mishandled. Because, for instance, things like chickenpox, when the chickenpox vaccine, the varicella vaccine, was introduced, up until that point, chickenpox was not a reportable disease. So they started taking reports when the vaccine was introduced and then said there was a huge decline in the number of cases being reported, but they had no history to actually compare it to. They said, in this year, we introduced the vaccine, and therefore we have this number of cases. The next 2 years we had a decline. Well, like most infectious diseases, chickenpox is cyclical in nature. So you can never compare 1 year with another year. You have to look at a longer period of time and a bigger picture, and they never do that. And I wanted to ask you very briefly to talk about your pertussis, your whooping cough figures for children under the age of 4, because I think this is really important for people to be aware of. It was under the age of 4, wasn't it?
Yeah. The important take-home message from that is that the majority of whooping cough in our community is occurring in fully vaccinated children. Now, what that means is that we shouldn't be out there blaming all the unvaccinated children for having whooping cough and therefore spreading it to others. It's a simple message that reminds people that when you hear of a whooping cough outbreak, you're looking mainly at fully vaccinated children popping it. And that's been the case, even in other countries as well. The papers have been published on that. In fact, just getting back to this graph and the death data, the biggest reaction to them is, but science, you know, people say, oh, but scientists tell us the opposite. Science speaks to the opposite occurring, that it did get rid of death and all that. And my response to that is, this is where science starts.
Yeah.
You collect the fundamental data and you look at it. And you see what story it tells. That's the beginning of science. If you're going to reject the fundamental data, you're not conducting any sort of science at all.
Mm.
Just playing with things.
Vaccination is treated more like a religion than a science. You have to believe in it. You have to bow down to the idol of you know, the fact that vaccines have saved the world. Vaccines save millions of lives every year worldwide. That is a fact. That's a given. It's a mantra. And we can't question that. It's above question. Anyone who questions it is an anti-vaxxer and anti-science and just spreading misinformation. It is the most amazing form of cognitive dissonance I've ever seen, actually. So...
It's amazing. Actually, and on the subject of science and still on mortality, because that's my pet subject, because mortality data is so complete. Mm. I mean, everyone who dies, we've got a record of it, at least in the developed countries. But this paper has just recently come out, written by a scientist. It's an expert report. Now, this guy, Peter Goetsch, those of you who know Peter Goetsch, know that he's a towering figure in science, especially in evidence-based medicine. He's one of the pioneers of the Cochrane Collaboration. He was one of the founders of it. And he's one of the pioneers of meta-analyses and systematic reviews. He knows how to do this stuff. And he recently, he's not an anti-vaxxer, by the way, he recently wrote an expert report. Halfway through this year, entitled The Effect of DTP Vaccines. Now, DTP is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. That's different stuff. And it was the vaccine that was used for those three illnesses for many years in our country. It's still being used in the low-income countries. Now, this is called The Effect of DTP Vaccines on Mortality in Children in Low-Income Countries. And first of all, found that there's no robust evidence that any vaccines have improved mortality anywhere in scientific literature. But the really worrying thing that he wrote about here was the DTP vaccine, because he said the best evidence we have indicates that it has increased mortality. It has caused an increase in deaths by a factor of about 2. So, can I just read you just a little bit in his final remarks and conclusions of his expert report? He says, it is the duty of a manufacturer of a drug or vaccine to demonstrate in randomized trials that it works and has a positive benefit to harm balance. This is not being done for the DTP vaccine. Not a single randomized trial has been carried out, but the vaccine is nonetheless on the market. Then goes on to say, I find this approach problematic. We base our decisions on the best available evidence. And this evidence tells us that it is likely that the DTP vaccine increases total mortality in low-income countries. I therefore believe that no one should be offered this vaccine without full informed consent that includes information that the vaccine is likely to increase total mortality. I also believe that the vaccine should not be recommended, and that if anyone wants to use it, it must be as part of a large randomized trial. I consider the need for randomized trials an urgent ethical imperative. Now, this is a guy who is not anti-vaccine. He has, as long as I've known, been a full supporter of vaccination, very much involved in vaccines. But now that he's looked into the DTP vaccine and examined the evidence, that's what he thinks.
Yes,
so everyone says, yeah, but science. Example. Look at
and one. I will put a link to that study. I think it's freely available. Is it just the abstract? No, it's the whole study that's available. And I'll also link to Peter Abi's study, which is Peter Abi is someone who has been reporting out of Guinea-Bissau. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, for about 30 or 40 years. And he published a study pretty sure it's last year or the year before, showing that children who got the DPT vaccine, again, the older whole cell vaccine, were up to 10 times more likely to die from any cause than children who were unvaccinated with DPT. So this is a vaccine that we no longer use here because it's incredibly dangerous, but it's much cheaper to produce. So we're using it in the developing world where apparently children are not quite as valuable in as they are here.
We used that vaccine for
We
many,
did
many.
for many years, and it was under an awful lot of pressure that it was finally removed, and the acellular vaccine, which, to tell you the truth, is not much safer. But yeah, we've been talking about bringing that vaccine back. The government is talking about reintroducing the whole cell vaccine because supposedly it's more effective than the acellular vaccine and less likely to cause antigenic shift. But there's no evidence of that. And Fritz Mooy in the Netherlands actually described in the 1980s how overuse of the whole cell vaccine was causing new strains of pertussis to come to the fore in society, exactly what we're seeing today, where over 90% of the whooping cough that's caused in Australia is from a strain that's not included in the vaccine.
What you're saying then about Peter Orby, that's what Peter Goetsch's expert report is mainly based on. He considers Peter Orby's studies to be very good, solid evidence, and there's overall evidence from other countries. I mean, as he, not a single randomized trial has been carried out.
No. And it's
Vaccine.
not just pertussis, it's all vaccines. They don't undergo randomized control trials. They don't have an inert placebo group for the most part. They're not followed for a decent amount of time and they're not studied independently. The manufacturers conduct almost all studies, and ones that don't show that the vaccine is good aren't simply not published. So.
So, yeah, just to recap, I think the reason this is so important that people get their head around this is because when someone paints a picture, hey, we used to have, 4,000 die every year from this disease, and now we have no one die, beat that, and you come back and say, yes, but it might be causing asthma, or it might be causing autism. Whilst those are very valid arguments, they don't weigh up against it. And let's take the autism example, for example, and try to think of it from the point of view of someone who's not yet convinced that vaccines are not safe or effective. Autism affects, different people will have different viewpoints on how what the prevalence of autism is in our community. But let's say it's maybe a few percent of the population. We then ask ourselves how much of that autism is caused by vaccines and how much of it may be caused by other things, environmental or whatever. And then we weigh that up against those 4,000 a year who used to die from. What we have is a very weak argument trying to fight a very strong argument. And that's why I say, we are losing ground. We are losing ground because the two things that are dear to us are we want freedom of choice and we want an educated public. That is a properly educated public. Public that is aware of the pluses and minuses of everything. We're failing on both of those counts because as far as freedom of choice goes, we now have new laws springing up every day, almost, that are restricting our freedom of choice. We can no longer be in certain professions if we haven't been vaccinated. We can no longer receive certain payments if we haven't been vaccinated, or our children haven't been vaccinated. We can no longer send them to childcare. The list goes on and on. And so we're losing ground badly in that area. And in the area of educating the public, we've got a public that is largely educated by propaganda and slogans. And
Very true.
that's not an informed public. That that's a terrible situation. We've got a media, a mainstream media, that just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, the fourth escape, it's supposed to be. Where are they? They have buckled under the pressure. They're too scared to run any stories to question vaccines now.
Mm.
And we've got people who are trying to tell the truth being persecuted daily and in some cases prosecuted through the legal system. So, yeah, I don't think we're gaining ground. So a lot of people are feeling positive about it because people are getting passionate and worked up and there are some rallies going on. That, while those things are great, what that means is that we're getting angry. But so is the other side. They're getting angrier with us and they've got a bigger stick.
they do, but I think I think you're first of all being kinder than I am, because I don't believe that people in the media especially and people in the medical authorities, not the average GP, but you know, the people in authority are motivated by feeling that vaccines are actually there because they're going to save people's lives. I believe, and I don't think they've buckled. The media are not buckling to pressure. They are the ones pushing this. No jab, no pay, and no jab, no play are terms that were coined by the Murdoch media. And they are pushing this agenda. They have a strong vested interest. But that said, I do think it's really important to prove to people. There are still people with conscience in the media. There are still people with conscience in government and in authority in medicine, to prove to them that vaccines have never been shown to save lives, that their mantra that vaccines save lives is a complete lie, because there is no evidence that even one life has ever been saved by vaccination. And because of that lack of evidence, pushing people to vaccinate against their better judgment, against their education, is not only immoral and unethical, but it is dangerous, potentially life-threatening, especially in Australia, where all exemptions have been removed except following an anaphylactic reaction. So I think that if we can get your message out there that the evidence needs to come out that vaccines actually do save lives, and unless you have that evidence, we have to take a step back and look at this issue again. I think that that can be a very persuasive argument for many people who are convinced that vaccines are the best thing since sliced bread. So, yeah.
I think it's the tide of public opinion that's going to be the only relevant force in the long run here. As you say, there are still some legislators that have a conscience, and still people in the media who have a conscience. I'd like to believe they all do, but they are bowing to higher authorities. The journalist has to do something that the editor will approve of, and the editor has to make sure that things are done that their owners will approve of. And similarly in parliaments, you may get an ear from a politician, but they belong to a party and they must do what the party says. And the party receives money and all sorts of other support from, and they receive a lot of lobbying.
So
I think ultimately both of those players, the media and the politicians, they follow public opinion because they want to get re-elected, they want people to buy their newspapers. So they follow public opinion. When we change public opinion, they follow. So I think what's important is that we get out there, sure, visit your politicians, visit people in the media, but also visit all your friends. Make sure that everyone knows what's going on, what the real story of our history is. To do that, of course, we need to complete the picture with smallpox and polio. I don't know whether you want to talk about that today or another day.
I'm happy to talk about smallpox and polio. I did want to talk about the third world, but I think that's going to be for part two.
The third world, yeah, okay, low-income countries.
Well, which one would you prefer to cover now?
Yeah, we'll do that first because we just spoke about Peter Gudge, his expert report, which
Yes.
was based on studies that were done in low-income countries. As I was saying, not much done in high-income countries to establish whether or not they had a better beneficial effect on mortality. Let's stick a couple more graphs up there.
Okay, which graph are we looking at now? Africa?
Africa and India, one of them.
India. India. Let's go to India. We're in India.
India, good. A bit more of a complex graph, this one, but it's quite simple once we get your head around it. Once again, we're arranged in years along the bottom axis, 1960 through to the late almost 2010. And the thick line running through the body of the graph, that's in this one here, is under 5 mortality, and the dotted line is infant mortality. Now, this is not a disease-specific graph. That's because we don't have disease-specific data for India, right? That's typical of the low-income countries. They didn't. Their death registration system was very poor. They have virtually no cause of death data, and in some countries, only 10% or even less of the deaths are even registered. So this data that was used to plot this actually comes from surveys that have been done for quite a long time. Surveys done by an interagency group. It's all written on the bottom of the graph. Interagency group for child mortality estimation, and it's sponsored by UNICEF, the WHO, World Health Organization, the World Bank, and various universities. They've been doing these surveys basically for economic reasons over the decades. And what these surveys show, I mean, they measure the under 5 mortality rate and the infant mortality rate because they are very useful indicators of how well the country is doing on, how well the country is doing in the way of health. And this shows the under 5 mortality rate did not budge when all the vaccines were introduced. That's what these final lines are. All the vaccines were introduced right about the same time in the developing country, and they had virtually no effect on
Right.
the child mortality rates. And the same thing if you've got the Africa group,
Africa? No worries. We'll get that up right now.
Africa's obviously a continent, not a country. This is
Okay.
all the countries in sub-Saharan Africa combined. Okay? Same data, same picture, tells the same story. Now, why is this interesting? Because science. You'll hear people say that scientists have shown that their vaccines have saved 12 million lives in the last 10 years from measles alone. And that's once again an incredibly strong story. If you can say, we went into developing countries, we gave them a measles vaccine, and we saved 4 million lives last How can you think of a better story?
No. Well,
No.
great job. Pat yourself on the back.
I should be on the other side, shouldn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Salary. But the problem is, it's all bullshit. It's all done on a spreadsheet. That is not death data. They did not count how many people had measles, how many people died with measles. As I just said, they don't have that data to count. What they did is they opened up a spreadsheet on a computer and they just put the number of vaccines they delivered that year. And they said, well, we think that each vaccine has, 0.9% chance of saving a life. So they multiplied it out and said, we must have saved this many lives. And that's the figure they published. And when they published it, the media picks it up and says, we've saved X million lives last year through measles vaccination. And the public reads it and says, I take that at face value. So we think it's actual data being reported. It's not. It's modelling on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And this is the actual data.
And that demonstrates clearly that the introduction of all those vaccines have had no positive effect on the decline in under five mortality. I would love to see a similar graph in the United States, because even though they're not a developing country in any way, their infant mortality, I'm not sure about under five mortality, but their infant mortality has been rising very sharply. The more vaccines that are introduced, the higher their rate of infant mortality, to the point where they are now the lowest, the highest incidence of infant mortality of any developed country, and higher than many developing countries, including some African nations. So it would be interesting to compare that for under five as well.
Yeah, well, if you look at the infant mortality rates for the developed countries, Australia, America, the United States, whatever, you will see a similar story to this, in that when we introduced vaccines, they didn't cause change in infant mortality. And I need to remind you too that this does not, I might remind you, so but remind everyone listening, this does not prove that vaccines didn't work. What this shows, it's a very blunt instrument, but what it shows is that we have no robust data to support the idea that they did do it. You know, this indicates they probably didn't do anything.
And nobody's looking, nobody's collecting that data, because we don't even have the information that we have in Australia, which is X number of deaths from measles, X number of deaths from whooping cough. We don't have that. We don't even have that for polio in India. We have, you know, deaths from non-polio, acute flaccid paralysis and all this stuff, but we don't have good, strong, robust data on mortality from infectious diseases in any of these countries. So when we're told that the measles vaccine saved 2 million lives last year in Africa, that's lives that were never counted.
That is a total fabrication.
Mm.
Hear that headline? You need to read that as a fabricated number. It is unabashedly fabricated. I mean, they admit it. You know, in the original published paper that started all this up, it's admitted that it's not. And in fact, at the time they published it, the head of health evidence and statistics of the World Health Organization published a paper in the bulletin of the World Health Organization chastising them. Okay. How dare you use a spreadsheet to model something that the world was so keen on hearing the outcome of? You found you didn't have any real data, so you just reported your modelling on the spreadsheet. You said that's totally unacceptable. But by then, by the time his report got published, the media had already run away with the story because it's such a great news story they wanted to promote. And it's still being promoted today.
Yes. How long ago was this, Greg? How long was that first reported?
I think it was around about 10 years ago.
10 years ago. So for 10 years, we've been fed a lie and we're just eating it.
Oh, yeah, probably a bit longer than 10 years ago. I'm trying to rack in my brain now, trying to remember.
Mm.
But, yeah, the head of health evidence and statistics, I think his name was Kenji Shibuya. His report came out, unfortunately, well after the media got hold of it, because the publication time frame in medical journals is a lot longer than that in newspapers and TV shows.
By then they were invested in keeping that lie alive, so they weren't going to change their minds about it. And we just keep repeating that lie over and over again.
Yeah, you see, our mortality data in countries that have high income that has been meticulously recorded for the last, 150 at least years. Meticulously recorded. Everyone who died has been recorded, and some cause of death has been recorded. It may not always be correct, but it's the closest they can come up with. So it's a complete set of data in these countries in sub-Saharan Africa and India and a lot of other developing countries have very little robust data, extremely little in some cases. So that's why they use modeling. And the model was based on the assumption that it was going to save lives. So that in the end it reported that they saved lives.
So yeah, they used a model based on the expected efficiency of the vaccine. So if you got measles vaccine, you were expected not to get measles and therefore not to die from it. And if you didn't get measles vaccine, you were expected to get it and you had X chance of dying from it. So we will use these figures and figure out that if we vaccinated this many people, we've saved that many lives. It's so obviously wrong.
Well, wouldn't it be great if you could market everything that way?
Yeah. I think some things are marketed that way, Craig. But eventually they're found out. And I think eventually people are going to find out this lie too. And I think the information in your book is a great way to show that. Like I said, we've given your book away to so many people, my husband and I, and they look at it and they read it and they think, this can't be right because this is the exact opposite of what I've been told. And yet they look at the evidence, they see the referencing, and they think, well, why is it that nobody else is telling us that this information is out there? And I think it's so important for everyone to read this book.
Well, it's important to realize too that these graphs have never been seriously questioned. Right. I've had certain unknown keyboard warriors on the internet say, oh, they're fake, and then run away. But, I mean, this is the legitimate data. I've run these things before I published them, nearly 10 years ago now. I ran them by the Commonwealth Health Department and my state health department. I said, look, if you see any problems with this, you let me know from that published. And they wrote back and said, we don't see any problems. This is legitimate data, okay? And you can download on my website. You can download the data that I use to plot these. Make up your own graph, I've also got a link to the historic document that I get very early data from, so you can download that and get it straight from the horse's mouth. So these is totally legitimate data. That's the only data.
Your website is vaccinationdilemma.com?
Yeah, one word, vaccinationdilemma.com.
That's right. And your first book, Vaccination, A Parent's Dilemma, is available there as a download. I'm very happy that I have a copy of it. But that's all about your court case in Queensland when your children were kicked out of preschool because they were unvaccinated. And that's a great read also. And it's another sign that sometimes, no matter how much data you've got to prove your case, justice doesn't want to know.
Yeah, Bill Carter didn't want to know.
No, he did not. But it is very interesting also to see how the government experts in that case didn't even know their own information from their own published studies. Who was that guy who was the expert? I can't remember his name.
There were three. There was Brian Feary, Michael Whitby, and John Horn. Three expert witnesses.
Right.
And, they didn't bring anything. One of them brought one paper, a paper he'd authored himself. And he got very angry when I questioned it. But anyway, the others quoted papers and Michael Whitby quoted papers and got it wrong. And when I corrected, I had the published paper there. See that? Oh, I've got it here. Still, they were believed by the judge because how could three eminently qualified people like that be wrong and you be right? Nah, not possible.
And this is what we see with vaccination all the time, these appeals to authority. Instead of looking at the data that's right in front of your nose, you just say, well, you are an authority on this issue. You are someone without qualifications. And all qualifications mean is that you went through school and learned how to regurgitate what they taught you, whether it's right or wrong. It's just amazing that they can ignore the evidence that's right there and so obvious.
Yeah, these things were rejected in the courtroom. Rejected because I presented them. They weren't presented by a recognized expert.
Right.
So it's inconsiderate.
Oh, it is just so frustrating and so unjust. But I guess we all learn from what happens in our life, and it made you committed to this issue, that's for sure. And for that, we're all very grateful. So I think we're going to have to leave it in a minute. I can't believe it. We haven't gotten through everything, but I definitely do want to have a part two very soon.
Yeah, we need to talk about smallpox and polio.
We do. Yes, that's very important. And I think it's something that so many people, you always get, but what about smallpox? What about polio? You know, if it wasn't for vaccinations, we all would have died from that. We'd all be paralyzed. So it's very important to be able to show people that there is a way to maybe not debate the issue, but at least show that there is another side. And that's vital.
Mm. The polio story scares a lot of people because, well, how do we respond to that?
You know? It's complicated.
And actually, you can respond to it quite easily. But it is, yeah. You won't get a great response straight away from what you say, but if you calm and you put it forward properly, it's not that much to get you. And I think
that's great.
Investing in time to do that.
All right. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much and say that we will be speaking with you sometime before Christmas. I'm not going to be doing Under the Wire for the next 2 weeks because I'm going to be away, but I'll be back again. I'll post the date here, and I'll also post the links to your books, your website, and those articles at the top of this broadcast after I get off. So anybody who is watching this should be able to just click the links and find that. I have not looked at one comment the whole time that I've been here because I have someone else helping me, so I don't have to worry about getting distracted. But Greg, it's always wonderful to speak with you, and your information is always amazing. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Meryl. It's great to speak.
Okay. Thanks a lot, and we'll speak soon. Take care, and goodbye, everybody, from Under the Wire. Thank you.